start with this. How's your new baby? Wonderful, but the lack of sleep is taking a toll on my body. How's Becky doing? I am Becky. Bob looks worse. We were each asked to speak at this forum about concerns we had about MCH and the direction it's going in the country, and what our concern du jour was. And as you will see, mine is being an obstetrician, and I wish what Dione said was true, that I've inserted public health into obstetrics. I mean, God knows I've tried, but I'm not sure it's taken really well. But I have a real concern. I haven't practiced for over 15 years, but I have a real concern about the way obstetrical practice is going, and also the fact that there really isn't much of a population-based element of thinking in birthing care. If you look back at the history of MCH in the country, Martha May Elliott and the people in that those generations were really focused on children's health. And then it wasn't until the 1960s that we started putting some focus on prenatal care, and those are with the maternal and infant care projects, of which there were, I believe, 65 around the country, five in Florida. And of those five in Florida, those were the only places in Florida where people really got comprehensive prenatal care. After that, it began to spread throughout the South and the rest of the country so that most people had some kind of access to prenatal care. And as you know, more recently, we've been with the CDC and the March of Dimes gaining a good bit of interest in preconception and interconception care, something that a number of people have tried to push for years, and also the concept of centering pregnancy or group prenatal care, which I'm sure some of my colleagues will talk about, all of which would be things that would help. But one thing that we've not done in MCH is put much focus on the actual things that occur around birth itself. And I think my plea to you today in the minutes I have would be to try to convince you that there are serious public health problems concerning birth itself in the United States, and we need to include that along with all the other things we've done over the last 100 years as something that public health needs to be concerned about. So I have condensed a longer version of this, Well, I know it sounds funny, but God, we're like on an express train heading in that direction. So my answer, as you might suspect, would be no. We've seen an incredible rise in, remember, this is a major abdominal operation. And actually, the irony of this is when I was a resident at the University of Minnesota in the mid-60s, when the rate was 4.5%, the first paper I gave at the Central Association of OBGYN was urging an increase in the cesarean rate because we were pulling out too many large breaches and others, and they were ending up with serious brain damage, and they would have benefited from a cesarean. But as we used to say in the 60s, we've overdone our thing here. And the idea that a third of women should have their babies by an abdominal route is absurd. Our national goal is 15%. That's based on, you know, there have been no studies done longitudinally with enough of a population to tell us what the cesarean rate really ought to be. The 15% is based on estimates from the World Health Organization. I think it should be between 15 and 20% would be a healthy total rate, but at any rate, I digress. For one thing, we're really concerned about the Medicaid program crashing and burning. And even though most of the Medicaid program goes to pay for people that are disabled or in nursing homes, a lot of people think it only pays for mothers and babies. So every time it comes the time to whack the Medicaid program, they don't whack the old people because we all vote. but they whack the mothers and babies, and the way of doing it is very intelligent by dropping people off the program. And that's going to happen again, and it is happening in some states. But let's start looking at things we can do to save money on the Medicaid program. And one place would be to start with a very expensive procedure that's being overused. Just some of the broader problems with cesarean section. There is an increased maternal death rate with cesarean versus vaginal birth. Now, hardly anybody dies under each situation, but we are seeing the maternal death rate in the United States level out, and in Florida, it's going up. The fetus can be injured during cesarean, either cut with a knife or have as much problem during the actual birth process as if it was delivered vaginally. The short hospital stay lends to problems because it is major surgery and causes a tremendous percentage of readmissions to the hospital, which I didn't even include in the costs of cesarean over vaginal birth. That's an extra cost. And then, of course, we're all in the MCH section advocates of breastfeeding for everyone, but we make it much more difficult if we have an operative delivery than if we didn't. But the things that we don't tell women about when we are looking at articles in, women's magazines that say what a wonderful thing this is that there really are serious consequences for the mother and the baby in the next pregnancy after the first cesarean, and those multiply with the more cesareans a person has. Now, do women having cesareans get told that? I think that's going to be one of my themes, is real, true, informed consent about some of this stuff. 80% increased chance of malpresentation, 17% increase in preterm birth, unexplained stillbirth in studies in the U.S. and in Australia, occurring more likely in women after a cesarean than after a vaginal birth. Placenta accreta, where the placenta gets stuck to the wall of the uterus, usually near the scar, is not very common, but when it does happen, it's a real disaster and often leads to an emergency hysterectomy and many blood transfusions. McDorman and folks at the National Center for Health Statistics at the CDC did a very simple study. They just looked at millions and millions of births between 98 and 2001, 5.8 million, and 12,000 infant deaths. And they found, and they just looked at people that had cesareans and vaginal births, and on the birth certificates, there was no indicated risk. So they threw out anybody that had diabetes or some other problem. And look at the difference in the neonatal mortality rate between those two groups. A 77% increase in cesareans and quite a decreased infant mortality rate with vaginal birth. Our infant mortality rates in the country have either leveled off or are rising. And as you will see, we can associate some of this with the increasing cesarean rate. One of the problems is that women are buying into, and as the study that Jean DeClercq did called Listening to Women shows, the idea of having an elective induction or an elective cesarean is not necessarily coming from the women. That happens in less than 0.5% of the time. It's really the docs talking the women into, well, you know, I'm your wonderful doctor, and I'm going to be out of town next week, and wouldn't you like to have this baby a week early while your wonderful doctor's in town? And, oh, yes, wonderful doctor, that would be a great idea. But no discussion about what it means for the next pregnancy or what it means to this baby that may be brought out of there 2 or 3 weeks early, which is a big problem. We convinced obstetricians with the problems of chronic hypertension and preeclampsia that if they would deliver the baby, which was the cure for that problem, early, like between 1,500 and 2,500 grams, we could take good care of those babies in the neonatal intensive care unit. But those babies are under stress, and they really do pretty well when they're brought out early. But if you take a baby from a normal mother who is not under any stress and deliver them at 1,500 to 2,500 grams, the results can be really serious. And are we telling people that when we're offering them elective induction? If you look at MRIs of babies at 35 or 36 weeks versus 39 weeks, there are no sulci or convolutions in the brain. Their brains haven't developed yet. So a large number of them end up needing NICU care, special health care afterwards. Some of them die. Many of them have chronic medical conditions, very high incidence of special ed and learning disabilities, and a higher incidence of attention deficit disorder. Are people being told this before they have their elective induction or their elective cesarean? Again, the effects on the newborn. And I think one of the ways to turn around this trend, which we haven't done, is to focus on the effects on the baby. Because most women think, well, you know, I'm superwoman and I can get through all this. But I think they will start to worry if we start showing them the effects on the baby. This study in the American Journal of OBGYN showed that cesareans, and these were planned cesareans versus vaginal delivery at term, doubled the admission to the NICU. And when I talked about those costs of cesarean versus vaginal birth, I didn't talk about the fact that in many medium-sized hospitals, almost every baby after cesarean gets admitted to the NICU. That costs our state hundreds of millions of dollars for babies that shouldn't be in the ICU. They're there because after cesarean they have transient tachypnea of the newborn, that's TTNB, that's just fast breathing. And they get admitted there and costs a lot of money, and a few days later they get out, their moms don't get to breastfeed, and you know, the Medicaid program pays hundreds of millions of dollars for that. This is what our folks, Bill Sappenfield and Dave Goodman, the MCH epidemiologists in our state health department, are starting to find out. That they looked at, and I'm really condensing this to try to make it more reasonable, VBACs have almost completely disappeared from the scene, and yet studies are even coming out the last couple of months showing that they're really pretty safe and probably as safe as a repeat cesarean and maybe safer. Well, Bill and Dave's studies show that they're maybe slightly safer. 47% increase in preterm birth with a primary cesarean, and again, these are adjusted for age, race, ethnicity, etc., and 11% increase in preterm birth in repeat cesareans. Now, what's happening is that people are depending on a late ultrasound to tell them whether the baby's matured or not, and ultrasound really can't do that with a two-week margin either way. And so dating is a problem. But besides that, many of the people subjected to this don't need to have it in the first place. And again, it may be for the convenience of the mother, for the doctor, but these things are occurring, and they don't need to. So a 47% increase risk of preterm birth with a primary cesarean, that's an association that they've found that they're now looking into a lot further. So this statement they can make, two-thirds of our increase in prematurity among singletons in those years was associated with the increasing number of cesareans. Now, do the moms all know that when they sign up for an elective induction or elective cesarean? I don't think any of them know that. And so people are not getting true informed consent, and I'm going to say that over and over again. And informed consent, if a third of people are going to have cesareans, needs to be done while they're in prenatal care, not while they're in the hospital, so they have time to think about it and ask questions, and the husband can think about it and ask questions, and the grandma can, etc. I mean, I chair Florida's prematurity prevention program for the March of Dimes and have for the last 3 years, and I've offered to resign every year because I'm making it worse. And now we're starting to find out why. So, again, informed consent for cesarean or elective induction, we should start talking to people about this in their preconception care. We should, you know, there's good information out there with an evidence base that the Childbirth Connection has put out, if you look at their website. Then we should reiterate the whole thing about why you should prepare not to have a cesarean and do everything else that you can not to while they're in prenatal care, not while they're in the hospital in labor. Again, I brought this up as the history of where we've been, and we've already talked about that, but I think that in this coming century, we really need to focus on birth as something that we have ignored in the past in MCH. Is there anybody here from Childbirth Choices in Philadelphia, or what's that group? Joanne, what's your group called now? Are you still called that? Well, I know the Childbirth Connection, but you put this out, didn't you, 30 years ago? No. Okay. Well, at any rate, I hope somebody will do this again, because what they did, as I remember it, when I was on the ICEA board, was they sent questionnaires to all the obstetric caregivers in town, and they ask all the things a woman would want to know. You know, where'd you go to school? Are you board certified? This and that. You know, a lot of the OBs out there are not board certified, but that probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But then they would say, what's your cesarean rate? Do you offer family-centered care? Do you have the father in labor and delivery? All these things that pregnant women would want to know. And so the first time they sent it out, again, as I remember the story, most of the docs answered the question straightforwardly, and they told them they were going to publish this. But some docs sent it back blank, and some docs said, go to hell, wrote it across the thing. And very dutifully, they would put, Dr. Mahan is under M. He says, go to hell. And the next year, they all answered the questionnaire. But I really hope some enterprising person, and I've tried to talk to the folks at Angie's List about doing this, because they are starting to get into doctor satisfaction things. If you're all familiar with Angie's List, it's sort of like consumer report service that you can buy into. So they're thinking about it, but I think you can make some real money by doing this if you tapped into the right folks. So I just wanted to end with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Judith Rooks is our next speaker. Judith Rooks was a recipient of the Martha May Elliott Award for Exceptional Service to Mothers and Children in 1993. She is a nurse midwife and epidemiologist in Portland, Oregon. She has worked for organizations involved in developing or assessing projects in midwifery, maternity care, and family planning in the United States, for the World Health Organization, and in more than 20 other countries. Judith was principal investigator for the National Birth Center study, which was reported in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1989, and directed the Maternity Center Association New York Academy of Sciences Symposium on the Nature and Management of Labor Pain in 2001. She has published more than 60 scientific and professional works, including the acclaimed book Midwifery and Childbirth in America in 1997. Judith is past president of the American College of Nurse Midwives and received the college's Hattie Hemsmeyer Award for outstanding contributions to midwifery and maternal and child health care in 1998, and the National Perinatal Association's annual award for outstanding contributions to maternal and child health in 1999. Judith Rooks. Thank you.